Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenye's first short story collection, Friday Black, is a satirical look at what it's like to be young and black in America, offering surreal tales and dystopian satire about American consumerism and race. Friday Black has received amazing praise from a number of major American authors, including George Saunders, who called it an excitement and a wonder, strange, crazed, urgent, and funny. We'll leave it there for the moment. The new book is Friday Black, and it's a pleasure to welcome Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenye to the roundtable this morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate this.
It's a great pleasure to have you on the program. These stories have been in you, I assume, for quite a while, in the sense of wanting to get them out in the way that you did.
I'm absolutely. I wanted to be a writer for a long time. And I mean, even these stories have actually existed in somewhat of a similar form to what exists now for probably almost 3 years at this point. But even prior to that, you know, working towards getting these stories out, working towards telling stories that were both necessary and engaging and exciting to me. You know, I've been trying to do that for a pretty long time.
Let's focus on the word necessary for a moment. Necessary for you to get out. What was necessary about it? Obviously, subject matter and these topics that you want to discuss is part of it.
Yeah, for me, I like to tell stories that I feel could potentially do something in the world, and maybe specifically could potentially help somebody in a whole bunch of different ways. And so I think about narrative necessity as being how will the story sort of reverberate through the world, and what potential effect could it have? And I want there to be one.
I'm hoping you can read, just to give a tenor to this and to get an idea of the tone, is from the first story in the collection, Friday Black. This is called Finkelstein 5.
Fila, the headless girl, walked toward Emmanuel, her neck jagged with red savagery. She was silent, but he could feel her waiting for him to do something, anything. Then his phone rang and he woke up. He took a deep breath and set the blackness in his voice down to a 1.5 on a 10-point scale. Hey there, how you doing today? Yes, yes, I did recently inquire about the status of my application. Well, all right, okay. Great to hear. I'll be there. Have a spectacular day. Emmanuel rolled out of bed and brushed his teeth. The house was quiet. His parents had already left for work. That morning, like every morning, the first decision he made regarded his blackness. His skin was a deep, constant brown. In public, when people could actually see him, it was impossible to get his blackness down anywhere near a 1.5. If he wore a tie, wingtip shoes, smiled constantly, used his inner voice, and kept his hands strapped and calm at his sides, he could get his blackness down as low as 4.0. Though Emmanuel was happy about scoring the interview, he also felt guilty about feeling happy about anything. Most people he knew were still mourning the Finkelstein verdict. After 28 minutes of deliberation, a jury of his peers had acquitted George Wilson Dunn of any wrongdoing whatsoever. He had been indicted for allegedly using a chainsaw to hack off the heads of 5 black children outside the Finkelstein Library in Valley Ridge, South Carolina. The court had ruled that because the children were basically loitering and were not actually inside the library reading, as one might expect of productive members of society, it was reasonable that Dunn had felt threatened by these 5 black young people, and thus He was well within his rights when he protected himself, his library loan DVDs, and his children by going into the back of his Ford F-150 and retrieving his Hawtech Pro 18-inch 48cc chainsaw.
That is Nana Kwame Adjabrenya reading from the first story in his collection, Friday Black, that story called Finkelstein 5. Obviously, that comes from, I assume, is your take on recent events and something that you wanted to respond to. I have a million follow-up questions about just what you read, but let me ask you of what brought you to that particular place. And more importantly, the way that the story opens up the book, and really, as I said before you read, sets the tone. It gives you, it says, okay, here's who I am.
Yeah, I think this story definitely, especially as it moves forward and gets a little bit more intense, it kind of is like, if you can ride this ride, you'll find out right away. But thinking about how I got to the story in general, or more broadly, I was in college when Trayvon Martin was murdered.
Yeah.
I was here at SUNY Albany, and I think like a lot of people my age, that sort of sparked a shift in my consciousness. I sort of was able to see the world a little bit differently and recognize some of the injustice that had always been there, but that maybe I was more willing to like not engage with. And even back then, you know, I did something. Me and a friend of mine, we made pamphlets that we anonymously scattered around the campus, hoping to do something, hoping like, you know, to bring about some big change. I went to bed sort of thinking, you know what, I did something, I fixed it, you know. And obviously the next morning, the world was not fixed. And we had pretty much just littered, actually. You know, no one read our random pamphlets. And so moving from there, I continued to try to learn how to be a storyteller. I liked writing, but the issue was always very close to my heart. It always is close to my heart, still is. And the issue being the inability for Black people to be innocent, the way that Black people are murdered with impunity so often. It's something that I'm still concerned with, and so it finds a way into my fiction.
One of the things that I found fascinating about the story is that it would have been easy to go the gun route, and instead you went with a chainsaw. Hmm. And because it takes away that whole debate and just focuses in on the violent act of a person taking, in this case, the lives of five people.
Yeah, to use a chainsaw, it kind of pushes the story almost to people call like something like a satire because it feels like hyperbole. But for me, what's interesting and important to note is like, you know, whether you kill someone with a gun or with a chainsaw, they're just as dead either way,
right.
You know? And so the chainsaw does a lot of work for me. It also lets me like kind of look at the real, like, hey, listen, I'm trying to do something here. Like, you know, so we're not exactly just reporting an actual story. I'm creating something. But also, I think it helps us realize, you know, a gun and a chainsaw can do the same thing. You know, maybe one is less pretty, but, you know, death is death.
But Nana, the thing that, I mean, you know this all too well, but I think what scares the hell out of you when you read it is that you would not be surprised if you read this headline in tomorrow's paper.
Absolutely. I think my stories really operate right in that space of like, is this hyperbole? Is it not? Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't.
Yeah.
And I think just that sort of that gray space is terrifying.
The whole idea, and it was something that really, I will tell you, you know, the old line from Jerry Maguire of, you know, you had me at hello. Mm-hmm. That idea of setting the blackness in his voice down to a 1.5 on a 10-point scale. That is a remarkable way in the second sentence to say so much. And you keep that up throughout the story of the various rates and tones of blackness, which I assume is something that obviously not just for the purposes of this story, but you have thought of deeply.
Yeah, you know, that can see in the story, the blackness scale, it's really just me literalizing and concretizing what may be a more abstract feeling, but one that is familiar, I think, to most Black people, especially, that is code switching, acting a certain way in a certain space to be better received and also potentially be safer, you know. And so, I had it be literal in the story And then again, it shifts. It's almost something like surreal. But actually, for me, those sort of surreal shifts actually help me get straight to the point, and I can say exactly what I want to say about this issue. But also, I think it also makes it a little bit harder to reduce in terms of saying exactly what this means, because, of course, that conceit kind of plays with the idea of blackness operating on a scale, but obviously blackness is so many different things. Blackness can't be quantified in these ways, but when you operate on the paradigm of other people's fear, other people negotiating or trying to assign stereotypes to you, then you can assign that sort of scale.
Meaning you know what it means. You know what the scale is. You know, it, as the character is sitting next to a woman on a bus, you know where you are on that scale.
Yeah, and what that really means is you know how these people are looking at you.
The name of the new collection is Friday Black. Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya is our guest on this week's book show. Friday Black is also a story. It's very much about consumerism. It is also quite searing. Tell us a little bit about this story and that idea of wanting to look at the issue of consumerism.
So the story takes place in a mall on Black Friday, you know, the biggest shopping day in America.
Yep.
Where we have all these crazy sales and people are sort of camping out to get the best deals possible. I worked in the mall for several years, Palisades Mall.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, me too. You know, a lot of trauma, still getting worked out. And the Crossgates Mall here in Albany, actually. I worked there all through my college time, my time in college. And, you know, you see a lot of crazy things there. And for me, it's the story, again, is in this story, the shoppers are like almost zombies. They are sort of mindless. They're killing each other and the salespeople, and they're just rampant. And, you know, that's, again, me sort of pushing towards hyperbole, but also making us kind of hopefully remember, like, in real life, people get trampled to death for television screens. In real life, that's a thing that happens. And so how did we get here? How did we get to a place where somebody, because they won a TV, stepped on another human skull and killed them? You know, it's like, I think capitalism is really good at getting us to just do basically anything for things, and sort of getting us to maybe think less and less about people.
You describe your work in such a fascinating way of how people come to it and see it and the variety of it.
Yeah, and I describe it that way because it is a collection of short stories. There's a lot of different things going on, and so many times people want to give you like the elevator pitch about it. Tell me what this book is about, and I'm like, well, I kind of struggled for a long time trying to really key in on what to say to them, and actually it became my elevator pitch to say, I don't know, but da 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 da, and then I would arrive at this. But finally, I said, you know what? This is what I think this book is like. Imagine there's three people sitting on a couch. And the first one's like, you know, I think, man, this couch is really nice. It's like pretty, like, you know, soft. And I just like sort of the feel, you know, good butt feel. Next person's like, hey, like, I also, you know, this couch is great. We just did a great job, you know, getting it. Lumbar support is excellent. And the third person's maybe like, I also agree that this couch is comfortable, but I think we're overlooking the fact that it's made out of corpses. And so that's how I think a lot of this book might be described.
A really f***ed up Goldilocks.
Yeah.
So I think when you look at these stories, though, it reveals so much about us. It reveals so much about you. There is a story about your mother in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Was that one of the hardest to write?
It wasn't easy to write, but all these stories are pretty tough for me to write.
Sure.
I think there's a reason why it's super short. It's like when it's like a short, almost interlude, the second story in the book. But they're all pretty hard to write. But that one, it was tough. But also, it was one of the few stories that I did feel almost directly cathartic. I don't always feel like a specific catharsis or anything like that. I think in that story I felt something like that.
In looking at your education not only at the University of Albany, but then going to Syracuse and your mentors there. I read in the introduction the words of George Saunders, who's ended up being a friend of yours and a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
What is that like to have a person and persons that you've had that you talk about in the book, as far as being able to guide you and to bring these stories out?
It's, you know, I can't express how valuable it's been to me. It's been incredible. To have people help you realize your dreams. They help you, they sort of see who you want to be and try to help you get there. And then in that helping, they actually maybe help you become something greater than you even thought possible. And that's kind of beyond, in my opinion, beyond like writerly stuff, actually. Like on a personal, being a human being level, I think they've helped me in ways that are just insane. And not just George, a lot of people at Syracuse and a lot of people beyond Syracuse, but George Saunders, Dana Spiota, Arthur Flowers, Mary Carr, Sarah Harwell, Chris Kennedy, Bruce Smith. I'm sure there's others that I'm naming. And here, right in Albany, Lynn Tillman, actually. You know, so many people have helped me a lot. And it's I've been very lucky.
You have a story at the near the beginning of the book. I think it's actually right after the story about your mother, called The Era. And this is basically about this what we're in and what you have pretty much seen as we've been in war. This idea of perpetual war and something that you've seen for the better part of your life.
Yeah, a story takes place in like a future that I kind of extrapolate from using our present as like a sort of starting place. And yeah, a place where perpetual war is sort of just the standard, where kindness for kindness's sake has been discarded, which I think is maybe that era's times, like maybe big failing.
Right.
You know, the original title, I think, was In the Era of Kindness or something, or In the Era, and then that references a place that's called like the Era of Kindness, where people remember back to the time where people were nice just to be nice. And in this world, the world of that story, they view that as like almost a moral failing, kindness for kindness's sake, because they think it's dishonest. And, you know, I think for me, I imagine a world like that to be a dystopia.
That idea of the realism and the very gritty realism that you write about and you shared with us in reading a portion from the first story, and that idea of futurism that you touch on in that story, you want to balance those two in this collection.
Yeah, I for a long time I struggled with like, who am I as a writer? Like, am I this? Am I that? And I tried to actually get some of my professors to tell me who to be. Like, I'm doing a surreal thing. Should this book be surreal stories? Should it be more realistic stories? And I had both, and I felt like both had power. And, you know, and wisely, again, talking about my mentors, they resisted making me choose. You know, I said, should I be this or should I be that? They were like, yes, you know. And I think that became sort of my power, or the power of this book at least, is that, you know, I think for me, whether you're working, I like a story to do whatever I needed to do. I like the story to serve my characters and get the characters to be pushed just as far as they can be pushed. And whether that's in a world familiar to ours, whether it's in the future, whether it's in a mall where there's zombies, whatever that takes, I'm willing to do it. And I feel comfortable doing it. And I feel sort of lucky that I don't feel bound by any particular genre considerations.
But it's to your credit as a writer that we then, as the reader, buy that.
Yeah. It does take work, especially just from story to story, totally disparate worlds, you know. Like you said, there's a story about my mother, which is pretty much straight realism, and it ends with like almost a second person direct address. I hope you can be proud of me. The very next story takes place in a world where it's perpetual war future, and it starts suck, win, and die, you know, totally different registers.
Right.
And I'm hoping that readers can like move from story to story and like enjoy that sort of, wait, where am I space? And then learning again to understand.
Which, of course, is what we're living in, right?
Right.
I mean, none of this, just because right now is comfortable doesn't mean that in 5 minutes it's going to be comfortable.
Right. And that's a, and to me, that's like a, like, it's like a secret, like it's an extra sort of pleasure for me in a book like this is the sequencing, the sequence of having like, you know, wow, like who knows what's going to be next? Who knows what's going to be next? And I think like you're saying, I think that is more familiar to like life.
I always hate saying this because it seems to, in some way, I don't mean it to ever disparage the work inside. This also, besides just being an incredible, powerful story collection, it's a beautiful object. The book came out beautifully. They did a gorgeous job.
They finessed it. They did great. they did an excellent job.
Not all first-time writers get that. Get what I you got there, lucky. Sir.
I got really lucky. And I mean, even like the inside flaps are cool. Like they did.
The art is amazing, and it also again sets the tone for what is inside.
I agree, and I feel like yeah, the color shifting sort of makes me imagine sort of like that potentially surreal shift or something. And it's my favorite thing about it is it, even if I love it, but even if I didn't, it's like it's bold. I mean, it's like doing something. It's not just one of those bright color breaststroke covers, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's at least trying to do something, and I appreciate that.
I remember talking to George Saunders when his story collection won the Pulitzer, and he said to me, or right before, and he said to me, I said, what question do you not want me to ask you? And he said, well, everyone asks me when I'm going to write a novel. And then the next time I had him on, he had written a novel.
Yeah.
So I guess that's my long, weird way of asking you. Uh-huh. Do you think of that as the next step?
I don't. Well, I mean, it's going to be funny. I don't think of it as a progression, if that makes sense. I don't think a novel is any way higher than a
right.
short story collection. I think novels do things well. I think short stories do things spectacularly, actually. And I think a lot of novels, I think, I wish were short stories. But
amen.
But I do happen to be working a novel, codenamed Top Secret Novel, right now. but yeah, I am.
But that also is, I mean, that speaks to something that I think most writers want to attain. Correct? Is to have that the luxury, if you will, of creating the entire world of a novel.
I think. I think so. The reason it's a novel is because I tried to do something else and it couldn't.
Right.
You know, it doesn't fit. And I feel like to do the whole world, there's some pleasure there. But I find just as much artistic sort of joy in creating that sort of tip of the iceberg feeling that I think you get with short stories. I like the sort of mental exercise of creating a whole world really quickly. And then like inhabiting that, and I really do enjoy that. But there is I think a lot of people like seek a novel because they think they should just seek it or something. And I don't like arbitrarily pursue a novel at all. I just have a story that I think needs to be a novel, and I had it before I had started before I even sold any this book.
The name of the new collection is Friday Black by Nana Kwame Adjabrenya, and the book is published by Mariner Books. Nana, thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program, and best of luck.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you for having me. It's been a lot of fun, actually.
Great pleasure having you on the show. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our programs. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces The Book Show. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue. Trying to change.